This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, November 10th, 2023. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, a special program on one of Labour's greatest victories, the International Health and Safety Accord in the garment and textile industries. The Labour Start report about union events and singing.
From the slums of New York City to the streets of Bangladesh, 100 years of struggle, it ain't over yet.
This is Radio Labour.
I would say that the accord is probably one of the most successful things the international trade union movement has ever done.
That is Atla Heya, the General Secretary of Industrial Global Union. He was referring to the International Accord on Health and Safety in the Garment and Textile Industries in Bangladesh and Pakistan. Industrial is the global union federation which represents more than 50 million union members in 140 countries. They work in the supply chains of mining, energy, manufacturing, and the textile and garment industries. It and Uni Global Union were instrumental in getting clothing brands to adopt an international accord on health and safety after a disastrous collapse of a building in the Rana Plaza near Dhaka, Bangladesh. The accident killed 1,134 mainly young women garment workers and injured more than 2,500. After the accident, the labor movement and the International Labor Organization worked to get major clothing brands to improve the health and safety conditions in the country's factories. More than 200 major brands have signed the agreement. However, many companies in the United States, such as Walmart, have refused to sign on. I asked Mr. Heya to describe what the labor movement did after the Rana Plaza disaster.
We managed to negotiate an agreement with 200 of the biggest brands to ensure health and safety in the textile and garment industry in Bangladesh. And we have installed a team of engineers that do inspections in all of the factories that produce these clothing brands. We have made, I think, about 60,000 inspections in that tragic incident. There have been close to 300,000 corrections that have been made.
What countries does it cover? And are there plans to extend it to other countries?
Well, as I said, this came about because of this disaster in Bangladesh. So over the first 10 years, it was about Bangladesh. Then we had an extension of the agreement 1.5 years ago, where we agreed with the brands that we should try to extend to one more country. And late last year, we decided that that country should be Pakistan. Now we're building up the infrastructure. We've started inspections and we'll roll out the full program in Pakistan over the next year. Then we have now agreed on an extension of the whole international accord for another 6 years. And in the new agreement, there is a process of expanding to new countries. We don't know how many because that depends on the progress in the countries where we're already operating. But I'm optimistic enough to say that we will have expanded by the 6 years to hopefully 3 more countries. And we have done feasibility studies already in big parts of India. We have done it in Morocco and we've done it in Sri Lanka, which are 3 of the countries that are most in desperate need of an accord system. So I hope that these or other countries, if things happen, will be the ones that will be the next ones in line.
So tell me, how does it happen that the accord gets accepted in a country? Do you work with the employer groups? Do you work with the governments? Do you work with the trade unions? How do you convince a country to become a participant in the international accord?
Well, we have to work with all the parties that are involved in this. We need permission, of course, of governments. The government needs to welcome us. We need the cooperation of industry. So that means the employers will have to work with us. Of course, there's no point for us as industry all to do this if our trade unions don't want it, so they have to be on board. And the brands, of course, need to be on board. So what we do is that when we've made the feasibility study and we decide to go to another country, we will start discussing with regional and national government, and we will start discussing with employers. And we'll, of course, tell them about the accord, how it will work, how they will be involved, and the benefit of the whole industry. And obviously, a big pressure point is that the brands will not continue business if they don't live up to the standards that are in the accord.
If they don't live up to the standards of the accord, they can't work in the country. Is that part of the accord?
Part of the accord is that if a factory does not meet the standards and does not make the improvements that are needed after one of our inspections, then the brands are not allowed to place orders in that factory.
With the success that the accord has had, have you found it easier to talk companies into participating in the accord?
We have, as you might have heard, had big challenges with brands in the U.S. They have in Bangladesh made their own system, which we feel is not really up to speed. And we, of course, invite all the American brands into the accord, but that has been difficult. They now seem to show more interest as we are moving on to other countries. It is a challenge, but we have most of the big brands in the world on board, so that is an incentive. And we know that those brands who are not in the accord, they have to make sure they have their own set of guarantees to ensure health and safety. And I don't think there's any more rational and efficient way to do that than being part of the accord. That is one of the arguments that hopefully eventually will convince all the brands.
For the first time, the accord will cover freedom of association. How will this work? Do you expect this to increase the number of workers who will be able to join a union?
Well, what the new accord does is that it recognizes the extreme importance that freedom of association, freedom of rights, collective bargaining has on health and safety. The accord itself doesn't include in its scope freedom of association, but freedom of association is recognized as an important building block. And that means that we will have a freedom of association and the right to collective bargaining into the mechanisms of the accord. That means that it will be part of the training curricula, because through the accord, there has to be training of all the health and safety committees in the factories, and there has to be all employee training. So this will be in the training, and it will also eventually be in the complaints, because there is a complaint mechanism connected to the accord. But any employee of any of the factories that produce for these brands can send a complaint if they have issues with health and safety accord, but now also if they have issues on freedom of association. Whether that will result in more people joining, I would hope so, but that remains to be seen.
The accord is a legally binding agreement. How does this work? How will it be enforced?
It's enforced through international treaties. So there is, in the end, if we can't find a solution, binding arbitration. So if we say that a brand does not live up to the different elements of the accord, we can take the brand to binding arbitration that is administered by the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague. And any settlement that comes out of this arbitration is legally binding any court or any jurisdiction where the brand has its operation.
This whole thing sounds like a major victory for the labor movement. Can you describe it like that?
So I think that the accord itself is one of the major achievements of the international trade union movement, and now we have a sustained solution for the next 6 years with a possibility of expansion to new countries, and as you said, an inclusion of the right to collective bargaining and freedom of association. I would say that the accord is probably one of the most successful things that the international trade union movement has ever done.
Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, our top story section included links to the strike calls that have been the Nigerian labor movement's response to the assault suffered by a union leader, the death of yet another Bangladeshi garment worker shot by police as she joined her comrades in demanding a living wage, and a national general strike in Finland where unions are organizing in response to regressive labor law changes. Other top stories this week include the warning strikes by almost 500,000 public sector workers in Canada and the launch of a campaign to protect Serbian airline union activists from employer retribution. A random sample from our news pages includes articles about a series of strikes across Iran 2 weeks ago and a teacher's protest against government fiscal and education policies in northern Cyprus. But my favorite top story of the week was the start of the 15th annual Canadian Labour International Film Festival. The festival combines real-world and streaming events across Canada. Festival goers get to see films from around the world that have a focus on work, workers, and working class experiences and culture, films that would never otherwise come to their attention. On our Working Women news page, you'll find accounts of continuing sexual abuse at McDonald's restaurants in the United Kingdom and how women workers there are pushing back. A video that details the struggles of Afghan women food workers as they continue to organize, and more on the effects that unionizing has had on domestic workers in Jamaica. And from Romania, we carried the story of impunity for those behind a smear campaign directed at women journalists. Stories appearing on our health and safety page in Newswire this week include a resurgence in, quote, death by overwork, end quote, in Chinese electronics factories, the start of a new push for a safer shipbreaking sector around the world, and increasingly urgent calls for an end to the targeting of South African police by violent gangs. Our current photo of the week is a simple shot of the banner of the International Labour Organization. The ILO is not well known amongst most trade unionists, but the tripartite, which is to say workers, employers, and governments, body sets global labor standards. Yet again, the employers group, the ILO, is pressing an attack on the right to strike. The workers group, led by the International Trade Union Confederation and the Global Union Federations, are mobilizing to push back when the ILO meets next June. Labor Start hosts online solidarity actions at the request of unions around the world. This week we'd like to highlight urgent appeals for online solidarity with trade union activists in Serbia, Georgia, Iran, and Mexico. If you can spare just a few seconds, you can do your part in these struggles by sending a solidarity message. Look for details of these and other campaigns on our site. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now, here are the Low Tide Drifters with Every Stitch.
Of clothing someone sweats away unseen, while the tangled threads of justice unravel at the seams. From the slums of New York City to the streets of Bangladesh, 100 years of struggle, it ain't over yet.
In the ashes of disaster, they won safety on the cutting floor and basic workers' rights. Now the union labels faded and the war is waged anew. Along a global chain of greed and pain hidden from the public view.
For every stitch of clothing someone sweats away unseen, while the tangled threads of justice unravel at the seams. From the slums of New York City to the streets of Bangladesh, 100 years of struggle, it ain't over yet.
And that's it, labor news you can use. I'm Mark Polange. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.